Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
It's borne by ticks and often goes undiagnosed. It's called Lyme disease. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Lyme disease was first officially identified in the 1970s and named after some nearby towns, Lyme and Old Lyme in Connecticut. It's most commonly a tick-borne disease in the Northern Hemisphere, and symptoms may include a circular skin rash, fever, headache, fatigue, and depression, amongst others. And the diagnosing all of this can be controversial. In our studios, our guests are Pam Andrews. She's the founder of the Lyme Disease Association of the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Also, Marilyn Williams, who's Vice President of the Association, as well as Anita Baines, who is a psychotherapist. So welcome to you all, first of all.
Thank you.
What I want to first start out with, since all of you suffer from this disease, I want to sort of go around a bit and talk a little bit about your own experience. I mean, how you first discovered and what kind of impact it's had. And Marilyn, let's start with you.
Okay. I was told for 16 years that I had fibromyalgia. And during that 16-year period, I did get tested for Lyme disease twice. But what I didn't know was that the tests are unreliable. And it was actually my veterinarian. I was going through a really bad period about 7 years ago. And I took my dog in for annual checkup, and my veterinarian said, you really need to get to somebody who understands Lyme disease. So I did, and it opened the door to me finding out that for 16 years, I actually didn't have fibromyalgia. I actually had tick-borne diseases. But I also had my sister for 20 years was told she had fibromyalgia. She actually had tick-borne diseases. My mom for 10. And I had a 19-year-old niece who was actually lying in bed dying because her kidneys were shutting down. She had been very, very ill for 2 years. And it turns out that she, too, had tick-borne diseases. We now know that she was probably born with them. So by me finding out I had them, it really opened the door to so many of my family members getting the help that they also needed.
What kind of personal impact did it have on you in terms of how you get about and, I mean, how you about your daily life, and was there something you could then do about in terms of I don't know, cure, but nonetheless something
sure.
That could mediate the symptoms?
Well, I'm happy to say that right now I'm symptom free, and that's the goal of every Lyme patient, to get to a point where you are symptom free. And during that 16-year period and during the past seven of during treatment, I mean, you'd have some good days. But then you'd have days where you felt like you got run over by a Mack truck when you got out of bed. So it was very, very difficult to keep working, to keep going all the time. You had to really pace yourself. And then once I learned about Lyme disease and I started undergoing the treatment, which for me, the treatment was 2.5 years. But since then, I have also done maintenance along the way as needed. It really takes a financial toll on you, huge. It's very expensive, but it's very hard because you can't participate in things that you know. And on relationships, it's very tough because you can't go to that party because you're too sick tonight. You know, you have to call in sick sometimes to work because you're just too down.
Pam, I'll turn to you. Also note that Pam, of course, is a former program director here at Delmarva Public Radio. Welcome, Black, for an appearance here.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
So tell me then a little bit about, first of all, your own personal experience in terms of what happened to you and how you discovered that you had this disease.
Well, actually, my story begins with my daughter. In 1991, she went to Assateague and unbeknownst to us was bitten by a tick. But she had one of those classic cases where in the middle of summertime, when nobody had the flu, she had just a raging case of the flu, meaning that she had a high fever, she couldn't eat anything, and she was actually getting so sick that I was feeling she needed to be hospitalized. And this lasted for 3 weeks. And her primary care physician said that I should just calm down because she would be fine. She just had the flu. She would be okay after she got over this bout of the flu. And she was never okay after that. She did get over the acute phase of that. But then for the next 9 years, she just got sicker and sicker as one of her body systems after another failed. And by the time we finally found a doctor 9 years later, she was just critically ill. She was living her life being in bed. She would be falling down when she was walking or trying to walk around. She would be blacking out. She got down to 90 pounds. It was just really sad. And I had to go against the medical advice of 13 doctors and 3 medical institutions who were telling me that she was making it all up. And so I said to her one day, "Leah, I really need to know what the truth is. Are you telling me the truth?" She said, "I am sick, Mom." I said, "Fine, we're going to keep on trucking." So we did, and we finally found a doctor who said, "Well, I'm going to test her for Lyme disease." And this was in the year 2000. And I said, "Well, actually, she's already been tested for that." And he said to me, "Well, that was the old ELISA test. We now have a test that's come over from Europe, and it's called the Western blot, and we know now that it's really much more accurate. The original ELISA test that she had, we now know, is about 50% accurate, which is basically such a bad test that it shouldn't even be used. Unfortunately, it's still being used today. It has a lot of false negatives." So we found out she had Lyme disease. She was in treatment for 4 years. She had IV antibiotics. She had intramuscular penicillin. She had oral antibiotics. And then after that, she switched over to herbals and supplements and got into the whole thing about lifestyle issues, which are huge in getting over Lyme disease. You need to worry about getting enough antibiotics to, you know, knock down that high bacteria load that you have. But you also need to be thinking about things of getting really good rest, about diet issues, about not pushing yourself too hard. Allow yourself, when you are really sick, to give into it. About the year 2003, I realized that I, too, had many of the symptoms that my daughter had. So I went to her doctor, who became my doctor, and asked him to test me for Lyme disease, and it came back a positive test, too. Not as high as my daughter's test. She just was off the charts with, you know, the high bands for the Western blot. But it's the sort of thing where it ruined her life. She really was bedridden for a very long time, for years. Much of that time without really understanding what was going on. And what Marilyn said about how devastating it is to you as a person, because you can't go to parties, you can't go out to the movies with your friends, you're just not feeling well enough. And there may be occasional days here or there, but it also strains the credulity of family members when you're always getting sick when it's time to have parties or be going to Christmas gatherings, and you just are feeling horrible. So, it's very difficult on relationships, and, of course, the financial issue, as Marilyn mentioned, is very much at play, because you have to decide, do you want to get well, which means sometimes you have to pay for things yourself, or do you want to just go along with what the insurance company tells you you are allowed to do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to be your own advocate. You have to break out of the mold and say, I need to do what's best for me to get well, no matter what the insurance companies or the medical system is formulated to handle. You have to make your own decisions.
It's hard, too, with the family members because, of course, all the doctors have said that you're not sick. And so that's where you get a lot of friction in the families, because family members don't believe the person that's sick because the doctors have said you're not sick.
Anita, tell me a little bit about your story.
In 1997, I was diagnosed with polymyalgia rheumatica, and I had extreme pain. At the time, I had 3 jobs, rushing from one to the other. And I was not under medical treatment because I didn't have insurance at the time. And finally, I went to an arthritis specialist, and he said, "Oh, that's what you have." And he put me on steroids, but I was on them for 6 months. My extreme pain was relieved, but I couldn't sleep. I had a lot of sleep disturbance, a lot of pain, diet problems. And so I changed my whole lifestyle. I changed from 3 jobs to 2 jobs. And as Pam said, it was really a lifestyle change for me. I changed everything, my diet, my activities, and I got over that pain. And then I became an advanced practice registered nurse and psychotherapist. And so I became interested in helping people deal with issues that the establishment couldn't help them with, because I was diagnosed with this chronic illness and it really didn't help after I went off the prescribed medication. All my symptoms came back. So that's really my motivation for working with people who have the diagnosis, because I know what it's like to go through for a long time. And then I was approached and asked to write a book about the energy psychology techniques I use, which have been helping people with Lyme. Two physicians are referring people to me who have Lyme disease. And so they've had some really great improvement in their stress level, and their symptoms of Lyme have decreased. And interestingly enough, about 2 weeks, and so I guess it was about 2 months ago, I noticed this little bump on the back of my knee, and it was itching. And I thought, well, gee, that's an unusual itch. And it was in March, and it isn't mosquito time. And because I was becoming more Lyme aware, doing a lot of research, I had it checked out with a Lyme aware physician. And sure enough, I was diagnosed with Lyme. And then just a couple days ago, I learned that I have a co-infection that's called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, which is local. So it's been a very interesting personal experience, which I really didn't have any awareness of. And I was just really amazed at the trauma that I hear from people who are ignored, made fun of, told it's all in their head. And so this is really it's become a personal journey for me now. So that's my story.
Well, first of all, in terms of symptoms, I mean, people go through their daily lives and they may or may not be aware that they've been bitten or not bitten or whatever. What should people be aware of in terms of whether or not they may actually have this, or that they should at least check it out anyway? What any of you?
Well, I would say that the surprising thing about Lyme disease, the Lyme disease is not just the Borrelia spirochete that creates that particular list of symptoms. Lyme disease, in its broader sense, are a number of co-infections. First of all, the spirochete can go anywhere in the body and therefore can attack any organ of your body. And the list of symptoms, therefore, includes just about anything that you have in your whole body system. And then the whole list of co-infections goes beyond just bacteria. For instance, there's one that's very prevalent in this area, Babesia, which is a parasite, and it's much like malaria.
Pardon me.
And you feel very much like you are too hot, too cold, you have headaches. There are just a whole complex of symptoms that go along with Babesia, and you get the Babesia from the same tick bite that you got the Lyme disease or the Bartonella or Ehrlichiosis, any other number of co-infections. So, I mean, the symptoms are legion.
A lot of times, the first thing that people notice is fatigue. They're just not quite up to speed with the way that they feel. And then they start getting headaches. You know, what happens with Lyme disease is it's completely up to your genetic makeup. What my symptomology was versus her symptomology can be completely different. And what's interesting is that, I mean, generally speaking, of course, you have a lot of people that have joint pain, a lot of people that have muscle weakness, you have a lot of people that have headaches or dizziness or night sweats and that sort of thing. But then you have the other set of people that are very neurological, who their very first symptom might be the loss of their legs, the use of their legs, or who have muscle tremors, who have Parkinson's-like symptoms. Or we have an 11-year-old girl here in Salisbury who her very first symptom was complete and utter loss of hearing. That was her first symptom. And then she got headaches, and then she got fatigue. And it took her, of course, several months of being yelled at by doctors that she was faking before, you know, her mom found her organization. You know, you have the mother of four from Delaware who, her mind had gotten so bad with her thinking process that she had all of her kids in the car with her, and she came up to a red light, and she couldn't remember whether she was supposed to stop or go. That was one of her symptoms. And, of course, she was more neurologically inclined. These tick-borne diseases, they mimic so many other diseases that because we have such poor testing, because we have doctors that don't understand tick-borne diseases, many, many people here on the Delmarva Peninsula are being misdiagnosed with things like multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, Parkinson's syndromes, ALS, Alzheimer's. All of these things are just sets of symptoms with no known cause, but what we're finding here on the Delmarva Peninsula, that so many of those people actually have tick-borne diseases that are the cause of all of their symptoms. So anyone who has those types of diseases really needs to get to a doctor that understands tick-borne diseases.
Anita?
And just how different my situation is, the other thing that made me aware that maybe there's something going on, I woke up two mornings in a row feeling unstable and dizzy. And I knew that that was one of the symptoms of the co-infections. And so I thought, oh, gosh, I better get this checked out. But other than that, I don't have any other symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is with some people. They may only have one symptom, but they know that they're not quite right. And with children, it's so sad that we have so many children here on the Delmarva Peninsula that are being medicated with all kinds of drugs for ADD, for behavioral problems. And in children, it's just very sad because they're getting diagnosed with growing pains. I can't tell you how many people I have heard from mothers who said, my child was diagnosed with growing pains, as if that's like a disease. And then you'll have behavioral changes. You'll have a child who was such a good child, but now they're so defiant. You know, there was like they flipped the switch. You have kids who were doing so well in school, and suddenly they're not doing well in school. You need to look for changes, because a lot of times with children, with toddlers, you have toddlers who were potty trained that suddenly are now not potty trained again. And so, you know, it's very hard to tell with children because they can't articulate what's really going on with them. But you've got a sick child here on Delmarva Peninsula. You better get them to somebody who truly understands tick-borne diseases.
I want to get to the whole testing issue and diagnosis, because as Pam alluded to, there's the ELISA test, there's the Western blot test. And I understand a couple of things. One is that Lyme can disappear, say, into the tissues and not show up on a test, for example, right? So a lot of the diagnosing that doctors try to do who are into this tends to be more clinical. And anyone can address this. So lay out for me what it is, if I think I got Lyme. What tests am I looking for getting, and even if they don't show up, you know, that I have it, but I still have these symptoms, there's a clinical diagnosis as well. I mean, lay that out for me. I mean, any one of you.
The clinical diagnosis is really the most important. You really must get to a doctor who understands all the ramifications of Lyme disease and tick-borne diseases, because otherwise you're not going to get a good evaluation. Many times what happens with the disease, with the testing, is that both the ELISA test and the Western blot are not actually looking for the spirochete itself. They are looking for your body's immune system response to having that pathogen in you. And if you are so sick that your body is no longer mounting that immune response, then you're going to test negative. And many times what we find out is that our really sickest patients are likely to not test positive. So that's why you really must get to a doctor who understands when they're looking at a patient with a whole complex of symptoms, they really need to evaluate is this Lyme disease? There are some tests out there that actually do look for the spirochete. Some of them are expensive. Some of them take a long time to have, that particular test developed. So Marilyn might have some more information about this.
Well, and you need to understand, too, that there are two sets of guidelines for the diagnosis of tick-borne diseases. We have the Infectious Disease Society of America and our governmental agency, the Center for Disease Control, that says that on a Western blot test, you have to have 5 IgG bands or 3 IgM bands, whereas there's a whole nother set of guidelines written by the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society that says, you know what, there are Lyme-specific bands on a Western blot test, and if you have a positive IgG or IgM of any one of these Lyme-specific bands, it's an indication that you may have the bacteria in your body, because there's nothing else known to man that's going to create a reaction in your body to these particular bands. So we always say, get a copy of your Western blot test yourself. Take a look at it. We give people what has been found to be Lyme-specific bands, and we tell them, if you have one of these Lyme-specific bands that's positive on your Western blot, then you definitely need to get to a Lyme literate doctor. The other thing is that, as Pam alluded to, we do have now a culture test, and Lyme literate doctors actually have more in their arsenal instead of just these two, ELISA and Western blot tests. We have urine antigen testing, but we have a Lyme culture test now, and you can't, if the lab that has developed this test is able to grow the bacteria in the petri dish, you cannot argue with it. I mean, it's there, but it takes a long time to grow. Sometimes it'll take up to 60 days because this is a very slow-growing bacteria. But there are tests out there, but a lot of people don't realize is that if you get the co-infection testing, then that's a big enough indication. So for instance, with me, I'd had tick-borne diseases for 16 years. By the time I got my first Western blot test, my body was like, I'm not even going to mount a defense against that. You know, I lost that war a long time ago. I'm not even going to give you any antibodies. So I didn't have anything on my Western blot test. But I tested positive to Babesia. And by the way, around here, we have Babesia duncani, not Microti.
Which is
only supposed to be on the west coast of the United States. All of the Babesia experts will tell you it's only on the west coast of the United States, but we have it here in Delmarva Peninsula in very large numbers. But I tested positive for Babesia duncani. So my Lyme literate doctor said, if you got Babesia, you got Lyme. So he treated me for both. It took me a year and a half of antibiotic treatment and treatment for Babesia. Babesia was only 6 months. I started then showing positive bands on a Western blot a year and a half later, because by then the bacteria level had come down and my body said, maybe I got a chance. I think I'll start mounting a defense again. And so then I started getting positive.
Let me ask you this, because there's some question about, as I've read some of this stuff, the concept of chronic Lyme disease. I know some physicians say, it's a condition that does not exist, or we can't prove that it exists. How do you react to that?
Well, I can tell you that one of the great challenges to the concept that there is no such thing as chronic Lyme is the fact that one of the founding members of the Infectious Disease Society of America, which, by the way, is the society that is out there saying Lyme disease is hard to catch, easy to cure, and 21 days of antibiotics cures Lyme disease. We know that's absolutely not the case. I mean, we're 3 people sitting here. I've had 4 years of antibiotics and not on them anymore, and I'm doing great. But the point is that even one of the founding members of that group said himself that he has, in his practice, found at least, when he wrote the book, 51 folks who do have chronic Lyme disease. And we even know that some of those folks who are saying that and even testifying in court about that, they themselves have treated their patients for a lot longer than, you know, the 4 weeks of antibiotics that they're recommending for most doctors out there. And it really is just criminal, I think, that they are putting that forth. My granddaughter just came down, was just diagnosed with Lyme disease. She's been battling for over 3 years, symptoms. And of course, I've been saying, looks like Lyme disease to me. And her doctors refused to even talk about it. And finally, we got her to a Lyme letter doctor, and she tested positive for Lyme disease and some of the co-infections. The thing that I find just so disturbing is I accepted that as part of the lack of understanding in the medical community 21 years ago when my daughter had it. It's really tough for me to accept that after working myself personally for 10 years to get the word out there that we're still facing that sort of thing in the medical community where doctors are not diagnosing Lyme disease.
And we have one of the most important studies came out last year. It's always referred to as the monkey study. Mm-hmm. In this study, they chose rhesus monkeys because they're the closest to humans physiologically. And what they did was they did two different studies. The first one, they said, you know what, Lyme patients are not getting treated right away. So they infected the monkeys with the Lyme bacteria, but they waited 4 to 6 months before they started treating them. But when they did start treating them, they treated them very aggressively. They gave them 30 days of IV antibiotics and 60 days of oral antibiotics. And then post-mortem, they found live Borrelia bacteria, the one that causes Lyme disease, in 75% of the monkeys, in the tissues of the monkeys. Mm-hmm. And then they set about to say, okay, the IDSA says 28 days of doxycycline, that's it, you're cured. So they then infected more monkeys with the bacteria, and then they treated them right away. And they treated them for 28 days with doxycycline. Post-mortem, they found live bacteria in 100% of the monkeys. So there's your study. It's like case closed, you know, on the persistence.
I want to turn to Anita because I want to talk about how do you, you know, if you have this disease, we're talking about techniques and trying to deal with it. What do you recommend, as particularly as you see people and in terms of trying to sort of deal with this on a day-to-day basis? I mean, some days you're going to feel better than obviously than others. But what is your thinking?
Well, being fairly new to this whole community, I'm learning a lot. And what I'm learning is the stress of Lyme, or the stress related to anything, compromises our immune system. And the more our immune system is free to fight whatever organisms are invading us, the better off we are. And all as Marilyn suggested, the stress of not being able to attend events, and Marilyn as well, and many of my clients, their whole life has changed. So it's like they are resisting the diagnosis, fighting it, feeling bad about it, feeling guilty. And so these techniques that I use, one of them is called emotional freedom technique, and it is amazing in its ability to release the stress built up through these emotions that people have.
Describe that for me.
Describe really? The
yeah.
technique?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it looks kind of strange, but the technique really is based in acupuncture theory. And I might add that I've belonged to this organization that started a website for veterans, and I'm recommending the website to many of my clients. It's battletap.org, and there is a self-applied program there using this technique. But basically, it is using acupoints that are used in acupuncture. That are holding the energy in the body, mind, of whatever traumatic events people have had. And so the technique is identifying the issue. I'm really angry that I made the decision to go on that trip because I exposed myself to Lyme. And I feel guilty and I feel sad. And so that's the problem. And then the person is directed to tap on acupuncture points, beginning at the top of the head, the eyebrow, side of the eye. These are all acupuncture points, while repeating an aspect of this distress they're experiencing. And what eventually happens is they have what we call a cognitive shift. Initially, their anger, self-directed anger, guilt, whatever, is changed to, oh, I really did the best job I could, or it was okay that I made the decision that I did. And this happens naturally through this process. It's really quite amazing. And there is a study done with veterans who had to. I'm thinking of Lyme in terms of being a trauma, because a trauma is an unexpected event. It is threatening. We feel threatened. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to be able to take care of my family? Am I going to be able to continue working? And then it's very isolating. People feel very alone. And so, and then after all of the visits to people who can't help them, we feel powerless, or they feel powerless. So all of those are components of trauma. And so working with these acupoints helps to release the trauma.
We've been speaking with Anita Bain. She's a psychotherapist. Also, we've been speaking with Marilyn Williams. She is a vice president of the Lyme Disease Association of the Eastern Shore of Maryland, as well as Pam Andrews, who is a founder and also, of course, former program director at Delmarva Public Radio. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Cora Mitchell is our volunteer producer. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.